I want to do the countdown, but I won't.
3, 2, 1, and we're live.
As
folks.
Of 3 seconds ago.
3 seconds ago.
We're not live, but
I can't count to three. Certainly not in seconds.
You just proved otherwise.
No, I didn't. I counted backwards. I don't know how to count forwards.
You can't count to three.
No.
You can count from three.
I can count from literally any number.
But not to that number.
Infinity, infinity minus one, infinity minus two, infinity minus three.
I'm not sure if that's funny.
Trust me, it is.
Okay. Right. Welcome everybody to Nerd Critic, a podcast about big movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is CJ.
And I am Jordan. CJ here is our resident nerd.
And Jordan is our studied and credentialed critic and massive Star Wars fan.
Smooth opener.
Thank you.
I feel like we usually hiccup.
We do.
We there's like usually some problem, and we just hope that people think it's funny. But they probably don't. They're probably just like, do the freaking intro.
My thought is that they're like, you know, that's charming. That's what I go for.
I certainly hope so. I think we depend on it every episode, including this one, as it turns out, because I couldn't just leave well enough alone. So today, I feel like I have to get this out there right now. What time is it, CJ?
It is 8:30 in the morning.
Yes, it is.
And I, before this, was sleeping. What were you doing, Jordan?
I was watching Star Wars. Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker.
What time was your showing, Jordan?
5:30 a.m., CJ.
Where do we live, Jordan? The only place that would have a 5:30 a.m. showing of Star Wars.
Los Angeles, California. It's been an interesting morning for me. So the story here is that my wife, who is also a huge Star Wars fan, had a class last night that she could not miss. And I was not going to see this movie without her. So we knew that we wanted to record this episode today. We knew we wanted to release it today. And the only way to do that was to watch it this morning for me. So I convinced my wife, who is not a morning person. I want to underline that if I can.
That actually surprises me, knowing your wife.
That could actually be like one of her real like identifiers, if you get to know her. Like,
not a morning person
is like a fairly strong if she doesn't have anywhere to be, she may be in her bathrobe at noon. She is not a morning person. So for her to get up at, I mean, I was up before 5 a.m and she was up at about 5 a.m and we made it to the theater and we got popcorn and Dr. Pepper. And that was my breakfast. So it was...
That is an odd morning.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, it was also... I will say this. It was the perfect seats in the CityWalk IMAX theater.
It's a good theater.
And we were alone on our row, but this theater was full behind us. Mm. So it was about a little over halfway full.
Nice.
At 5:30 a.m.
And so you've had zero time to prepare.
That was
any thoughts.
25 minutes ago, I was walking out of the theater.
Yeah. Well, here we are.
Yep, and here we are.
I saw the movie yesterday.
7 p.m.
6:30 was my showing.
Oh, 6:30.
Yeah.
Very nice.
It was a 6:30 showing, and I got your favorite seats.
Oh, very, very good.
Not
very
my
good.
Favorite seats, but they're good.
Close. It was close.
It was close.
It's like one row off,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like the walker divide is also there.
Yeah.
So it's more dramatic than just one row, but it's fine. But they were good seats. It was a normal after work, go see a movie. Theater was just packed. Just so many people. Saw a bunch of people that I knew. It was a grand old time.
That's wonderful. I saw no one that I knew.
Because you're the only one that would go see it at 5:30 in the morning.
No. Like I said, the theater was over half full, but they were fairly quiet.
That's fair.
There was definitely not a lot of big reactions. I may need to try to go see it again this weekend just for the sake of being able to see it in a packed theater.
Yeah. I will be seeing it in Utah tomorrow.
Oh, very nice. Yes. So you already have your second showing lined up.
I do, yes. Mm-hmm. I had my second showing lined up before I saw the movie, and I'm going to take my dad. So in Utah, which I'm curious to see what the crowd difference is.
Yeah,
from Los Angeles on opening night.
That'll be a really interesting contrast. Yeah. Maybe it'll be the same.
Maybe.
I mean, Star Wars fans, like, are they really geographically separated? Like, we are all the same.
No, but yeah, I mean, a difference would be opening night.
That's true.
I mean, it's going to be 2 days in, but like, still,
it'll be a different crowd.
Yeah. Let's talk about the movie.
So we should do, I think, a slightly more sizable, spoiler-free version, just because I have a feeling that some people are going to want to tune in and hear some thoughts before maybe they decide if they want to, you know, maybe for the non-Star Wars movie diehards out there,
they're trying to gauge.
Yeah, they're like, I don't really want to go spend more time and money on this franchise. So what do you think, CJ? Should they spend more time and money on this franchise if they're not a diehard fan? I'm opening up, I guess, with a tough question.
Looks
like I stumped you.
Well, take off the qualifier of if they're not a diehard fan, and the answer is yes. It's an enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, go see the movie.
If you're a fan of Star Wars.
And if you want to be relevant at all.
Then you need to see this movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good time. There's characters that you really enjoy. Poe and Finn, I really liked in this movie. And the performances from Rey and Kylo Ren are great. And it has all the things that Star Wars fans want in a movie.
I feel like you are being so careful with your words.
I am. So this is where I've landed with this movie.
He turns his hat around.
Yeah.
We gotta catch them all.
It's
time for business,
yeah.
CJ.
So where I land with this movie, I think, and I did some like actual digging and looking into the reviews, because I did not. Full disclosure here.
I tried. So I am as unprepared as I've ever been for this show.
Yeah. You're on the fly right now.
I have to be.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't read anything before I saw the movie.
So it's divided reviews wise. It's pretty divided. And I discovered
super divided. Isn't it like a 55%?
It's got a 58% right now.
58%
on
Tomatoes.
So I did a lot of research for the Last Jedi episode. I wanted to come prepped. I wanted to come representing the haters out there. So I read a lot of reviews. So what I did after seeing this movie is I went back and I looked at all of my notes for The Last Jedi, and I found those same people's reviews.
My gosh, CJ, you are bringing value to the show.
Well, I'm glad.
My goodness.
So I found their same reviews, but for The Rise of Skywalker. And there was a fairly clear pattern of if you liked The Last Jedi, you're not a fan of this one. And if you didn't like The Last Jedi, you are a fan of this one.
Not surprising at
all. Yeah, and there's a lot of reasons for that that we'll get into. But
I am so grateful that you did the research to find out that that was true, because I think that's fantastic. Because I would have guessed that, but I wouldn't have had anything to back it up. And now you have proven me right.
Yeah, I have.
True friend. The movie wingman.
Yes. the biggest one came from Forbes, who a lot of the quotes that I read in The Last Jedi were from Scott Mendelson at Forbes, who. I ended with his quote where he talked about this being a passing of the baton. If Force Awakens was a reintroduction of the world, and The Last Jedi was a passing of the baton. And his line that I pulled, that's not spoilerful at all, says that it undermines the previous two episodes in the name of giving some but not all original Star Wars fans a reassuring pat on the head. I think a lot of the original Star Wars fans, you are different, but a lot of the original Star Wars fans were the ones that had an issue with The Last Jedi.
Sure.
So that divide seems to be obviously exceptions, but maybe the majority.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Well, I'm really excited to share our opinions. CJ, what did you think of this movie?
It felt like an overcorrection from the reactions of the loud people that hated The Last Jedi. And I had a fine time, but I will rewatch it. I will, like, obviously I'm seeing it on Saturday. I will, like, it's perfectly good enough to be included in the trilogy. This trilogy has its strengths and it has its weaknesses, but I think of Force Awakens, Last Jedi, and this one is by far the lowest quality story specifically.
All right. So
what do you think?
I think that's a fair perspective, and I mostly agree with it. I had a really great time, actually. And I have some real issues, but it seems like this definitely is a there was a lot of retconning going on. There was an overcorrection going on. J.J. Abrams way listened to the haters too much, and I think to the deep detriment of the movie. However, and I will say this, for those reasons, the first third of the movie was rocky for me. It was hard. It was a lot of my worst fears coming true.
Totally.
Not to spoil anything, but you know, if you've been listening, there's some between the lines spoilers in there. But as the movie got rolling into the second and third act, I found it to be a deeply emotional experience, and had a really good time with a lot of the stuff that was happening, and thought a lot of the moments were genuinely well earned and beautiful. And I think ultimately, a number of things that closed out the movie made it a really satisfying finish for the trilogy. I will say, and actually for the entire thing, for the whole, you know, nine movies, even if you don't count the episodes 1, 2, and 3, which I don't. But it's interesting because my suspicion before this movie was that it would be like sort of comparable to the original trilogy, where Star Wars: A New Hope is a really good movie. Star Wars: The Empire Strikes Back is a great movie, and The Return of the Jedi is pretty good.
Yeah.
And it has some nice moments, but it's, you know, it's the weakest of the three, and that is, I think you are correct, that is also true of this franchise.
Yeah, and let me be clear that I had a really good time, too. There are some real high moments in here, and... Like if you enjoy being in the Star Wars universe and existing in that world, this definitely scratches that itch. It has a lot more lightsabers than The Last Jedi.
It's true.
And there's some I really enjoy, for the most part, what they did with Rey and Kylo Ren. I think that is the emotional core of the trilogy, and I think that they
mostly preserved.
It's mostly preserved, yeah. Especially with Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
I like what they did with him.
Yep.
So go see this movie. Go enjoy this movie. It's a solid popcorn flick. What I'm going to say is go see the movie and then come back and listen to this episode.
Whatever kind of fan you are, go in with mitigated expectations.
Yes.
And I think you'll have a really good time.
Yes. I agree.
All right. Let's spoil it.
Okay. Spoiler review.
So, Palpatine.
Oh, man. Man, if someone didn't turn it off, I guess that's a spoiler with no context. So Palpatine.
Okay, this is what made the first third of the movie really rocky for me.
Hold on. Are we following a structure here? Are we doing the nerd out?
Do you
out?
Have a structure?
Yeah, well, we have our nerd out because this is
the nerd out section.
Okay, this is the nerd out section.
I'm reminding myself. This is the nerd out section.
Yes, this is the nerd out section.
I'm confirming with you.
We're going to nerd out. We're going to lead with some positives, and then we'll have a chat.
First thing I got to say
is
that I really loved the design of this movie. It was really beautiful. I mean, you get the impression that J.J. Abrams, if nothing else, deeply understands the textures and visual substance of Star Wars so well. He did a great job in The Force Awakens. I think he does an even better job in this movie, where everything we're exposed to feels so much like Star Wars. It just and it's fresh too. Like, it feels like you're seeing more and more and more of this, like, fantastical galaxy. It's really gorgeous and wonderful, and I really, really, really loved pretty much every set and, like, every design in this movie.
Yeah, we talked about in our Force Awakens episode, we talked about J.J. Abrams being really good at, like, kind of mimicking and highlighting the strengths of tones and other directors.
Yep.
With Super 8 in The Force Awakens and Star Trek and stuff like that. And in this movie, that this might be, like the best version of that that he's done.
It might be the most Star Wars movie.
He's just lived in the world longer at this point, and and he's real, like, that mimicking of other styles is just has 3 exclamation points behind it in this movie.
It's gorgeous. And I mean, it doesn't feel, the thing is though, just like when we say that he's really good at it, it's so much not an insult. Like, this is
it's not
a super high compliment, and it also is not to the detriment of the movie. Like, it is great.
It's not like
thing.
A derivative thing.
No,
it's very much highlighting the strengths of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly, I think that ability made a lot of, like, the Easter eggs and the callbacks work when they otherwise wouldn't have.
Yep. Yeah. That's a great point.
Like, the whole feeling of, like, around Lando. It was great. It felt,
and in anyone else's hands, you would be so afraid.
That
would just be so hammy and trite and fan servicey and just crappy. But it was actually lovely.
It was great. It felt really good. When I said I liked Finn and Poe, you gave a micro reaction.
What was my micro reaction? I don't remember.
That maybe you disagreed. Like, did you like Finn and Poe?
I really did. Okay. I really, really did. I think maybe I was trying to recall all of their scenes because I felt like they were maybe a little underutilized.
I definitely think
I would have liked to see more of Finn and Poe's stuff. Even at the expense of some of the Rey and Kylo stuff, which I think was actually maybe a little oversaturated.
A little too much. Yeah. So I felt that too. I wanted to spend more time with Finn and Poe. I was worried because in the first two of this trilogy, Finn is very similar in both movies. Mm-hmm. And I was worried that they were just going to copy and paste him. Mm-hmm. And he was still going to be, like, a little scared and a little fidgety and all that. But they really leaned into the fact that Poe and Finn have matured as leaders and as... You know, when they go on missions, they're very clear in what they're trying to do and they stick with it. It was one of the few things that they didn't retcon. They didn't retcon the arc of those two characters in this one. And I liked that.
Yeah, absolutely. Finn feels like a matured warrior in this movie.
Yeah,
it's actually
absolutely
pretty great.
Yeah.
Specifically... So we're going to talk more about the whole Palpatine Sith thing in a little bit. But first of all, I want to say that going back to the design, that whole, like, Sith temple thing, awesome. Totally awesome.
I mean,
you're introduced to it when Kylo Ren shows up. And he, you know, has his,
the
wayfinder, and he gets there, and you're introduced to this setting in this world, and it's, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, really, unqualified, love it. And the massive statues underground, it's really,
Palpatine hanging from a little.
Yeah,
like,
Palpatine being like a, almost like the puppet at the end of, like, a giant, like, mechanical whatever.
Super creepy.
Really creepy, really cool. Like, I really liked... So what I want to say is, if you had to add Palpatine, and I'll talk about my problems with that, which should be fairly obvious. Maybe I don't even need to talk about them. But if you have to do that, if it's in the rule book for some reason that you have to, like, reintroduce Palpatine and, like, dig up almost literally, like, mm-hmm. out of the old movies and have him be the big bad, blah, blah, blah. I really don't think that it could have been done any better.
Sure.
I really don't think it could have been done any better. Yeah. And that's I can important. Agree with
that.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Something that I liked but wanted more of, I wanted, like the whole design of the Knights of Ren was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that
it was
like
really, really cool.
They all have their special weapon and like their special look and like they're all just are so hard.
Yeah.
And just, I wanted like one epic Knights of Ren with Kylo leading them kind of battle.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're outnumbered massively and they just destroy.
That was missing. Totally missing.
But the whole look, like I can imagine being a kid and like, with my group of friends, like we're going as the Knights of Ren for Halloween, and, like just getting into it, and it's like you're the guy with the axe, you're the guy with the big sword, you're the guy with the two swords, like just getting so into it.
CJ, you always get to be Kylo Ren.
I don't know. It feels like. Honestly, like they would be a villain team up in a comic book movie. So maybe that's why I love it so much. But I was real, real into the Knights of Ren.
I really liked the Force communication between Kylo Ren and Rey. I loved the Force saber battle between Rey and Ren.
So when I said there's some high points,
that's a high point.
That for me might have been the highest point for
me. When the stuff is like transferring from world to world, like. Really, really awesome.
Visually
really
stunning.
Really awesome.
Really cool. Well communicated.
Oh man, awesome. The way that scene was executed is like that's direction mastery. To be able to communicate what are these characters seeing and like how are they interacting with each other and like all that visual information and that really critical setup of like her at the end, of course, like one of the big high points for me. Ironically, because it was tied into the whole Palpatine thing, is at the very end when he says, I am all Sith, and she says, I am all Jedi, and she pulls the second lightsaber from behind her back, and she makes the cross thing. Like, I know it was silly. I know. It doesn't matter. It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. And, like, before that, like, her being able to give the lightsaber to Kylo Ren when he needed it the most, like through their Force communication. Like,
yeah,
that was great.
Yeah, the Force communication was cool.
It was very cool.
The setup of him taking the necklace.
Yep.
And then the reaching behind the back. That was pretty
super
freaking cool. That was
super cool.
Yeah, I did feel so. As probably, if you're a regular listener, you can probably imagine how many times I've seen the movie Avengers Endgame. And so the I am Iron Man moment is just – it's hardwired into my brain at this point.
Yep.
And for me, the I am
All Jedi,
it was paced and like – filmed almost exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you guys trying to recreate?
Well, that thing, that moment, it's not, I won't call it cliched, but it is part of storytelling / cinematic language. Like the moment where you have this,
it's the
single
mic drop
shot.
Moment.
It's the mic drop moment.
Yeah.
It's the moment where your hero says the line that confirms to you that they know that they're going to win.
Yeah.
And the story is over. Like now is when I win.
Yeah.
And like that is, it's great. And when it's set up well and when it's executed well, it's super satisfying. And this was all those things. It was really, really satisfying and really beautiful. And I was totally on board.
Sorry. I have a tickle in my throat. It's embarrassing.
It's okay.
So it didn't quite land that well for me. But at that point in that scene, because Kylo going up against the Knights, without a lightsaber, just getting destroyed.
Yeah,
which
he shouldn't have. He shouldn't have been destroyed.
I mean, he has
he
the force.
Just forced pushed every single All one of those into yeah. the wall.
But if they're trained by him,
sure.
You know what I mean? Like they should have.
This is how you dodge a force push.
Yeah, right. But then him like. Like the way it was executed, and I don't know what it is. There's like a specific stance that Adam Driver uses as Kylo Ren, where it's like his feet are wide.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like,
yeah,
just like kind of like Spider-Man, but not quite as low. And he's just like ready for battle. Yeah. And he looks hard. He looks real cool. And then he does that and he just pulls out the lightsaber and then gives a look of like,
it's over now.
It's over now. And you guys are aware of that. And it was great. There was a couple of comedic moments that really worked for me.
Yeah.
At the very end, when when Poe sees the girl that he has some history with, and there's words exchanged. She just gives this like you want to make out?
And she's
kind of
like,
look, and she says no, and he's like, that's fair. Not communicated in words at all.
Amazing.
That was great. The little what'd they call him? Droid blacksmith or something like that.
Yeah, like the droid hacker.
His like little victory. That really worked. And then when he comes back at the end and just pops up from the ship, there was some great comedic moments.
I really loved when he introduced himself to 3PO.
Yeah.
like totally nonplussed. This makes sense.
Yeah, there was a bunch. I think J.J. Abrams has some comedic chops in him that I'd like to see a little exercised a little bit more.
Yeah, he's always pretty good at putting like a little bit of comedy in there. I don't think that his comedic chops are as strong as Rian Johnson's. I mean, the funniest moments in this trilogy are all in The Last Jedi. Mm. Like the absolute funniest moments are in The Last Jedi. But there's some really good stuff in here too. And there's some really good stuff in The Force Awakens. Like really, really good stuff.
I'll have to rewatch a trilogy with comedy in mind because I think I found myself laughing the most in this one.
Really?
But J.J. Abrams couldn't make Knives Out. So it's hard to say.
Well, I mean, who knows if he could have? He didn't.
He didn't. Yeah, that's key.
One last moment that I must two last moments that I must highlight. You mentioned Endgame, and there's another moment that very clearly reminded me of Endgame, and I'm sure it must have reminded you of Endgame a little bit. When Poe is the all is lost moment, when Poe realizes they're losing,
and then
Lando comes in on the. I mean, man, if Abrams wasn't aping Endgame at that moment, I don't know. You know, and of course he was.
Well, and the sheer number.
Honestly, when he looks up and like when they did the reverse shot on the sky and you're seeing like all these ships, Dude, I cried.
Everything you wanted.
I cried a lot in this movie. I mean, I couldn't help it. I'm a big Star Wars fan. This was the last in this entire, like, huge series. And, like, there was a lot of really powerful moments. And I cried a lot. That moment, and I know it was so expected. And it was so set up. And, of course, it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
It worked.
I was almost overwhelmed. Like, it was so... So beautiful to me, and I just, that, and then the other moment that made me cry the most, probably the moment that actually made me cry the most, once again, pretty, like, on the nose, pretty whatever, but when freaking Han Solo shows up to talk to Ben Solo.
Oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely.
I was dead.
Yeah.
I was dead. And, like, there's, like...
That got a reaction in my theater.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're, like, I had some, like... So, you know, I think seeing that scene as a father is a different experience, I think, than it would have been before. And my kid's only, he's not even two yet, so it's not like, but like.
Because you're looking at it as you as Han. I was looking at it as Han as my dad.
Yeah. Well, and you kind of get a little of both. Like, if you're a father, then you can't help but sort of connect it through. So, like, you sort of get to be, you sort of feel like. You're kind of both people in a father son situation. You are having some vicarious stuff with both characters, and I just, man, that scene broke me.
That was a really good scene.
Yeah,
that was Harrison Ford of old.
Yeah,
he just the amount of things that he said with his eyes alone was so good. And then Adam Driver is also an excellent actor.
I really, that
scene was great.
That scene was a highlight of the whole series for me. Like that scene was so good that I was Yeah, it was very effective.
And yeah, so that was a high for me as well because I think if there's anything that works in all three movies, it is Kylo Ren.
Yep.
Which is honestly surprising, right? Because he's there to replace Darth Vader. So it's like that's a big task.
Yeah. It's a big helmet to fill.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. but I think that it works. I think that his arc his individual movie arc and his trilogy arc work really well. To the point that when he is there and Rey kills him, basically, but then saves him. Mm-hmm. And that was like half the straw that broke his dark side back.
Yep.
But then the memory of his father, and then that's it. And you're like, of course at this point. Like, the memory of his father gave him the redemption that he needed. It gave him the permission that he needed.
Yep.
to return to the light side.
Yep.
And it worked extremely effectively. I love the idea. There were a couple, like, the idea that the spirit of the owner or the previous owner or the whatever lives through the lightsaber. That was a hard through line for me in all of this. Because yes, there's the burying of the lightsabers at the end, but also Kylo couldn't be Ben again if he had that lightsaber.
Yep.
Like, so he just throws it. He does, like, it, that was the letting go of the dark side.
I mean,
it was really effective.
A great charged object.
Yeah.
I mean, so lightsabers in general are great charged objects, but like, yeah, that was a really clean way of communicating that. Obvious, but like appropriate. And yeah, it totally works.
Yeah.
Speaking of communicating with your eyes, particularly the moment of the turn in that scene when Kylo Ren says it's too late for me, which he said, which is an echo from previous moments in the series, but like when he says it, Adam Driver needing to communicate the uncertainty, like needing to communicate the hope that actually it isn't too late, like, but being able to do it was such a layered delivery of that line, because not only was he saying the line, but he had to say it with enough conviction that you know that there was like heart behind it, that like he really does believe, he believes that it's too late for him, and he's also like hoping for redemption.
Yeah.
And like getting that all in that line is, it was so masterful.
It was so good. Yeah, I think that for me, I was thinking about Kylo Ren. So I told you that after I saw this movie, I couldn't I couldn't sleep, because I went home, and my wife is out of town. So I did some research on the movie, you know, read all of those reviews, and then I went to sleep, and my mind could not shut off this movie. It couldn't, like, I just was replaying it in my head, and I was like, dude, I really didn't massively enjoy it. It was no Endgame for me, so why is it not going away? And it was Kylo Ren that was kind of repeating in my head. And I was like, okay, why is Kylo Ren so effective for me? And I think that out of everybody, like out of all of the characters and what they go through, Kylo Ren is the most human emotional story and arc that there is. Yeah. Like,
he has
that
the most
feeling,
complexity.
Totally. And that feeling of like, no, it's done. It's over. Like everybody has felt that in some point in their life. There's addiction where you always feel that way. There's like broken relationships where it's like, no, it's too late. I can't mend that bridge anymore.
I lightsabered that person.
Yeah. And so there's it's a very human emotion. And I think that Adam Driver is probably No, I'm not going to say probably. I'm going to commit to that. Although I love Oscar Isaacs, is the best actor among them.
Yeah.
And so his ability to get across all of that tortured and it's ripe for the picking, right? It's I killed my father to commit to evil. There's a lot to deal with there, but it was really effective for me. I liked Kylo a lot, and then him coming back to help Rey. Full on sprinting like a Marine sprints to get there was great.
You all know Adam Driver's a Marine, right?
Yeah. His presence is real. When Rey is in there and is like gonna kill Palpatine, and he's just booking it, and then he has to deal with the Knights of Ren. Like his whole thing there, I was so into. I was less into Rey's thing. I was very into his.
I think that and to put a sort of cap on all this, him ultimately sacrificing himself for Rey at the end by literally giving her his life. Again, pretty hammy, pretty trite, but it worked.
Yeah.
And I felt it. I thought that the way that it ended it was the perfect ending to his arc. It was the perfect sort of acknowledgement of what needed to happen. And I mean, yeah, it's the speaking of that classic arc of selfishness to selflessness that Kylo Ren's defining feature through like his character up to the point where he starts to really actually, go over to the light side is selfishness. He's just 100% selfish. And by the end, it's the total relinquishment of selfishness. It's like this story is not about me anymore. It's about her, and when she comes back alive and she kisses him, which if he hadn't died would have been an awful moment. But
I debate that it still was. Yes.
I think it was. I'm interested. Well. Because I was thinking about it, I was like, why do I not like this? Why do I not like that this is happening? And there was a few things going on. But I also realized that, like, on some level, there's more, not on some level, on almost every level, there's more intimacy between Kylo Ren and Rey than there is between any other two characters in this trilogy.
Absolutely.
And so it kind of makes sense. And I think that, like, I don't know. What I'm saying is I may feel differently about it in the future.
Okay.
And what I also really liked is I loved I love Ben's reaction to the kiss, which was the sort of like, he was just like, you are so lovely. I'm going to die now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just it was interesting. Okay, here's my emotional. I'm just gonna track my emotional my actual sort of reaction to the scene like in real time. So basically, I'm a little disturbed by the idea that he's force healing her because I'm not totally on board with the whole force healing in general by this point.
Yeah.
But like I get it. It's been whatever. It's. I think it was set up a little bit clumsily, but like whatever. It's a thing now. I get it. And then the transferring of the life force. Okay, whatever. It's fine. Like if I buy that, okay, great. So Kylo Ren is
a lot of forgiveness going on, but continue.
Is doing this thing, and then she wakes up, of course, and then she sees him, and her first reaction is to kiss him. Or not first reaction, but there's like this charged moment, and then she kisses him. And then I'm like, oh, and because I'm like dreading, and I'm like, don't kiss him. And then she kisses him, and I'm like, oh. And then, but the kiss lasts, but it doesn't. It's not a passionate kiss.
The music didn't swell.
No, it's just a. It's actually just a connection. And I start to realize, like halfway through the kiss, I'm like, oh, this isn't really a romantic thing. This is something else. And then it's over. And then he dies. And then it like made sense to me. Yeah. I was like, that was. I don't know if I'm 100% on board with it, but I think there's a lot in there that actually is functioning properly. And if there's a couple, it's tough though, because that kind of a scene and that kind of a moment after this kind of a story, anything that's a little bit wrong is going to feel really wrong.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. Yeah. I'll need to go back and really form an opinion. Yeah.
So when Palpatine is resurrecting himself by taking the life force of these two, forgiveness. And he says, there's a connection between you two that has not been felt for generations.
Yeah.
Right. That little line of dialogue, I want to explore. Why is that? Like, I love that idea.
Speaking of forgiveness and generosity, it's a line of dialogue that I'd like to forget. So.
Really? Because
here we are transitioning into our critical thoughts.
Yeah, continue. Yeah, yeah. So, because it makes sense to me. Because it's like, because in The Last Jedi, it was Snoke that was creating the Force connection between them. We find that out. Then in this movie, they do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Seemingly, I think it's Kylo that's doing it.
Yeah, it's like it's yeah.
But
there's sort of like this super layer of like mutual attraction going on that's kind of like pulling them together.
I was talking to a coworker yesterday, who was just so infuriating because he hates The Last Jedi and all of his arguments were so bad. And I couldn't – he just was a closed door and I couldn't get through to him. And I know that he doesn't listen to this podcast, so I'm okay saying it. And if he does listen to this episode, open your mind, sir. Anyway, he was talking about – he felt the sexual charge between Kylo Ren and Rey in The Last Jedi was really awkward for him. And I was like, sexual charge? I didn't see that at all. And because for me, it did not – I had zero romantic or sexual setup relationship with the relationship with them. My mind was not there at all. So when she wakes up and she kisses him, I just want him to be like best friends. Why does it always have to be?
Yeah.
And the idea that the kiss was just a connection, like, and the music didn't swell, I can kind of get on board with that. Like this overwhelming moment and you kiss him. Like, that makes sense, yeah. but why? And this is
Leia kissed Luke, right?
Sure, which has its own layers of weirdness. But this leads into the overarching issue that I have with this movie. And that is the overcorrection from The Last Jedi to be everything that the fanboy wanted. It was trying to be everything and include everything that the fanboy wanted. Led to me watching this movie, and there were a lot of decisions that I was like, oh, sure, I guess you can do that. Let's move on. Next decision. Oh, yeah, sure, I guess you can do that. And I ran into this, oh, sure, kind of mentality over and over and over. And with that kiss, it was another moment where they kiss. And I was like, I mean, sure, I guess.
Yeah.
But it wasn't fun or spicy or different or challenging in any way.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it was really bad. I still had a good time, but there was a bunch of stuff. Her healing with the Force, another one. Like, oh, sure. Oh, it's Palpatine. Like, I'm Palpatine's granddaughter. Oh, sure, why not? I guess let's move on. Yeah. And it just was over and over and over. And I wanted it to be different. I wanted it to be more challenging. The Last Jedi was very challenging.
Yeah.
It was very, you like have to show up, watch the movie. It's digestible. There's meat to it. This one, it didn't feel like there was a lot of meat. It was just very predictable in kind of a bad way.
It was a very easy movie.
Yes.
It was a very, very easy movie. And where the Last Jedi gives you a lot of really good and important things to talk about for a long time, this movie, there's not a whole lot to talk about. Like a lot of these choices were the most obvious choices if you were trying to make a movie to please as many people as possible.
Like Rey not being Luke's daughter.
Yeah.
I was like that's probably the biggest nail on the head that you could have done. But it was like It was, they just took one slight step to the right.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they still got the nail on the head that they wanted. They still got a Rey Skywalker line in
which,
there.
Which, I have to say, and I actually want to, I want to end on that in a little bit, but I don't hate that. We'll talk about it later. Because that's the biggest positive note that I want to end on for this movie.
Okay.
Actually is the very ending. So we'll wait to talk about it for a few minutes, but okay. Don't let me forget.
I got
that's where I'm ending.
I got another oh sure moment.
Okay.
Palpatine restored to full power. Sitting on his throne and being like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take down all of these ships.
Yeah.
Burn! And it does that deep bass, and there's just a huge lightning, and it's taking everybody down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, again, I'm sitting there, and I'm like,
oh,
okay.
Sure.
Oh, sure. I guess we can move on.
Yeah.
Like, it just was.
It's easy.
It was so easy.
It's so easy.
It was so easy. Anyway. I'm getting all lit up.
The thing is, so this is such a good. I'm tempted to have the meta conversation here more than I am to point out the movie's many sort of weaknesses. Because another weakness for me was the whole like dagger thing, which was really eye rolly for me. I was like,
it felt like a video game for me.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah. It was like I'm watching Indiana Jones here, except it's like not as clever.
Yeah,
and like. And so, you know, did someone really create the dagger to, like, do this
outline?
Yeah.
Like, specifically where she was standing?
It's just really weird, unfortunate kind of, that whole thing felt very forced to me. It felt like a scavenger hunt that, like, was unnecessary. It was a lot of material for the heart to live in. And so it felt like it was this really beautiful heart that was like kind of stuck into a very rickety body. And the body was the sort of like, you know, this cruft of plot that just kept getting in the way of actual emotional moments between these characters. So, you know, there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on, but, you know, excuses to get us from one place to the next in this world. It's tough because these movies, and I'm actually struggling with my own relationship to Star Wars because I know that so much of it is built on nostalgia. There really isn't much practically that makes any sense in these movies. Like, there really isn't. Like, and so it's tough because like in every single movie, new things have been introduced. Like new rules have been added to the world, new abilities of the Force. Like people who complain in The Last Jedi about like things that people do with the Force.
The Force has never been done before.
Yeah, every single movie has stuff that's never been done before with the Force. Every single one, and so this one no different. We got Force healing now. Okay, great. Like so, Force transfer of objects, which I don't think The Last Jedi did. So there's stuff that's happening. That has never been done before, and rules are getting added. But underneath that is the sort of like the reality that the universe that we're living in these movies is sort of fundamentally cartoony, and it always has been.
Yeah,
the fact that there's like sound in space, the fact that like when you fly between like planets, like you're going through like mazes of like asteroids and like all this sort of very dumb, silly crap, which is actually very much part of the Star Wars universe and always has been. And at the very beginning, when they were originally breaking the story for the original Star Wars movie, I'm talking about like George Lucas and his team of like creatives and producers and writers who were actually creating the first movie. One of the first decisions that they made was, do we treat this? Because that movie came out well after 2001 A Space Odyssey, which was in the 60s, and which got lots of stuff really right when it came to what actual space travel is like. And they said, do we want this to be hard sci-fi or soft? And they said, we want it to be soft. We want it to be more like an adventure fantasy than we want it to be like real space stuff. So they decided, Like that, and so that influenced every decision, like gravity on spaceships, yeah. The sound of like the way the lasers were, or like blasters work, right? With like shooting like laser bullets. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like actual lightsabers, ridiculous. Like it's way more magic than sci-fi. It's way more fantasy than sci-fi. So all that said, you've got to write like pretty big checks of suspension of disbelief,
sure.
Before you can like actually enjoy these movies, and I get that. So I think that it's really important not to spend too much time criticizing some of the stuff that doesn't make sense or that feels kind of trite or silly,
sure.
Because that's this franchise. However, Rian Johnson proved that you could elevate it. You could do even more. You could find ways to earn moments and build the world in a way that felt less trite, less silly, more emotionally substantive. And so it's tough because you see there are contrasts. It's the same thing that happens if you watch the original trilogy back to back. If you watch the original trilogy back to back, you see a really fun, sort of dorky, space fantasy action adventure movie in Star Wars: A New Hope, and then you come into Empire Strikes Back, and some real stuff happens, and some really like really really good storytelling happens, and it kind of like it was like, oh wow, look at this amazing storytelling happening in this very silly universe. And then the Return of the Jedi comes out, and it's so similar to the experience of this movie because you've got Ewoks everywhere.
Yeah.
And my favorite thing about the Return of the Jedi, and something that like nobody seems to notice while they're watching the movie, is that when they get to Endor there's a lot of narrative tension about like destroying this facility so that they can bring the shields down, so that they can destroy this, you know, so they can destroy the second Death Star, and like all this stuff is happening. And they get there, and there's like this chase scene through the woods, and then they all fall off of their speeders, and they wind up hanging out with Ewoks. And what do? They literally party with the Ewoks for like a day. And then the next morning, they're like, oh yeah, we need to destroy that facility because the fleet is going to be here pretty. It's like, what were you doing when you first got there?
Reason
they ran out of time is because they were partying with Ewoks. And like, I know, yeah, oh, it sets up that the Ewoks helped them win. I'm like, well, they wouldn't have needed the Ewoks if they'd just gone in earlier.
Yeah.
It's really stupid. And meanwhile, the Ewoks are silly. They're so cartoony.
Yeah.
They're impossible to take seriously. It's so clearly something that was written to pander to children, and like than it was an actual like really strong storytelling or world building move. And so that same kind of thing is going on in The Rise of Skywalker. You've got this like stupid Indiana Jones like scavenger hunt
and distraction.
You've got these grand relationships, like I'm the daughter of Pal. It's like, oh, come on! Like you're breaking something that could be working a lot better. However, in the Return of the Jedi, you have the tell your sister you were right moment, which is beautiful. It's heartbreaking. It's wonderful watching Darth Vader save his son from Emperor Palpatine. is beautiful. It's a highlight of the whole franchise. It's absolutely lovely, and you are grateful that the Return of the Jedi exists because of that, and because of Luke Skywalker fighting with Darth Vader and cutting off his hand, and then recognizing what he's becoming and refusing to fight and being saved. I mean, that whole sequence is so wonderful. So you forgive the rest of it. It is deeply silly. It's objectively stupid, but you forgive it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing going on here. Like, there's so many really outstanding emotional moments in The Rise of Skywalker that you kind of just have to forgive it. And it's frustrating that it doesn't get elevated, but at the same time, there's this huge anchor, like, weighing the whole thing down, which is the fan base. And I
get that. And I know, like, the cartoony stuff is the every ship in the fleet is a Death Star, right?
They all have planet destroying cannons.
And it's called the Final Order. And Palpatine coming back and cloning several clones of Snoke. Yeah. Right.
And who were all those people in the bleachers? I wonder.
Weren't they clones of like Palpatine?
Maybe. I don't know.
Oh.
Maybe
that's what I thought it was. I thought it was just a horde of Palpatines.
Yeah. Also, where did how did they crew all those ships? Like, they all came up out of the ground.
Yeah,
like,
clones.
Who was driving them? Must have been clones.
I thought it was just clones. There was a throwaway line of like, clones were, or the clone technology. Only the Sith had clone technology.
Oh, silly.
Cartoony. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Also, what was Finn gonna tell Rey?
I thought that he was going to profess his love for her.
I did too.
I think everyone did. And I think that's what we deserved.
And nothing ever actually happened. It's just nothing came of it.
That was,
and it came up multiple times. Yeah. It's not like in the quicksand, but then Poe brings it up again.
Poe brings it up like twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you needed that payoff and it never came.
What happened?
Yeah. I don't know.
What happened?
Yeah.
What happened? That's maybe there's going to be a director's cut of this movie.
Maybe.
So, which is another reason that the kiss felt awkward, because you're thinking, well, I think Finn and Rey are going to end up together.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what everybody wants.
Totally.
And I feel like that's – and to be honest, that feels like maybe one more thing that was done on behalf of the haters, which is that I don't think the haters wanted Finn and Rey together.
No.
Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. But them not being together felt like – it felt sort of dishonest.
Yeah.
It felt like there should have been that moment. But I don't know. It's – The three-way hug between the three of them at the end was actually really...
It was really good.
Really touching.
I did run into a logic issue of Poe and Rey, I don't think, know each other very well.
Well, they, like, meet at the end of...
The Last Jedi.
No, they meet at the end of Force Awakens.
Oh, that's... Yeah. Do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at the very end.
Okay, okay. Yeah. I thought it was...
I believe, yeah. Yep.
Are you sure?
I'm fairly sure.
Because I think Poe introduces himself at the end when the rocks are floating at the end of The Last Jedi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Yeah. So, like, I don't think they know each other.
No, you're right.
But maybe it's a you mean a lot to my friends, so you mean a lot to me. Anyway, it's fine. I had a bit of a logic barrier that made that not quite land as hard.
Yeah.
There's
a lot. I think the way that a little bit clumsy, but the way that was the effort that was made to earn that moment at the end was the fight was Rey and Poe fighting a bunch at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. The bickering.
So you can tell that they.
You know what you are? Difficult. Yeah. That's you have to know him at least a little bit. To know that.
Yeah, yeah. So they've been working together for a while and they don't like each other.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of forgiving that needs to happen. And I prepared myself before this movie for this movie. And I felt like...
For the movie that this was. Yeah.
And because...
It was kind of like a lot of my fears. Because when J.J. Abrams was coming back, there was that fear of like... Because J.J. Abrams is a fanboy.
Yeah.
Right? Rian Johnson is not.
Yep.
So J.J. Abrams made the movie that...
Well, Rian Johnson is a fanboy, though.
Well, not in the negative connotation that is attached to the word fanboy.
But I don't think J.J. Abrams is necessarily that negative connotation of the word fanboy either. What J.J. Abrams is he's a director of the people. He is a guy who's going to give the people what they want. So if he senses that the majority of the fan base wants certain things, he's going to give it to them.
And it was at the expense of the plot, of the story.
It was at the expense of the strong choices that Rian Johnson made.
I have one big last complaint.
Let's hear it. And then I'll share my one big last happy thing.
There was the Knights of Ren battle that was missing epicness.
Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted the epicness.
Yeah.
There will be some fan something made. I wanted a last lightsaber fight. I wanted a Vader Luke because it was Palpatine zapping.
Yeah.
And Rey, but I wanted.
Yeah, it was almost a beams of light moment again, which is
frustrating. Yeah, which is really frustrating.
Beams of light are just not interesting.
Like, take out even if the Red Room in The Last Jedi, the red was like if it was just copy and paste that. I'm perfectly okay
with
that.
Just watch it again.
Let's just make it a blue room. I don't care. Like just like yeah. I wanted something that epic level. Yeah. To be kind of the end.
And speaking of fan service, right? Like, I think one of the things that I really wanted, that I was really hoping for in this movie was, and I think they've done it in like video games where like you get to a certain like when you're like I'm not super familiar with the Star Wars video games, but I've like seen part of them played and I've like dabbled in one or two of them. I don't remember
very
well.
They're great.
Yeah, apparently they're great. Yeah. Maybe I will.
Yeah.
It's going to be a while before I get any more Star Wars fixes, so we'll see. Anyway, I wanted a moment where, like, one of the Jedi, either Kylo Ren or Rey, preferably Rey, because she's the hero,
yeah,
does, like, a magnificent force maneuver. Just an amazing, like, eye-popping, like, glorious thing. Whether that's like force pulling like a Star Destroyer or like some
huge
thing, you know, or even just like reminiscent of Kylo Ren, like pulling the house down on top of Luke to get away, like pulling the entire Sith Lord temple down onto herself. Like, screw this, you know, like this is over now, you know, like something like that. I mean, speaking of fan service, like give the fans what they want. I feel like everybody wanted that.
They wanted Rey to really be that the most powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Question, is it only Palpatine that can electrocute people? Or only bad people?
I don't know, man.
Because when she did the electrocution, it's
been kind of established. Well, I think that
it's kind of a Sith move.
Definitely what this movie was doing was saying all of Rey's power comes from the fact that she's the granddaughter of Palpatine. I'm just like, well, here's a middle finger for you, but okay. Now that we've established that that's true, like there's another. So I mean, in Star Wars lore in general, Force lightning is considered Sith stuff.
Because I somewhat wanted him to like zap her and her to like absorb it because she is.
Yeah.
The Palpatine's granddaughter. You know what I mean? But she does it that one time and then is like afraid of it.
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted to see like
more Force stuff.
Her almost like kind of embrace that side of her.
And then like use it for
good.
I kept thinking and it was fine the way it ended. The I am every Jedi moment was really great. And like the crossing of the lightsabers was also really great, particularly because she Force pulled it from like the depths of the whatever, like to get it back. And like, so, you know, it was great. But like also, I felt like emotionally, and this is maybe asking way too much moral complexity from a plot that is clearly not interested in moral complexity. But when he is commencing to destroy the entire fleet, I'm like, what magical thing says that if you kill him to protect your friends, you are not killing him out of hate. Therefore, you're not giving yourself over to the dark side.
Yeah.
Therefore, he is not going to inhabit your body if he dies.
Yeah.
Go ahead and kill the guy. Yeah. It's okay. You can do that, you know? And she does end up doing that. But I feel like she could have done it earlier, and she could have done it like a little more simply. Like, she didn't have to freaking deflect a bunch of force lightning to kill. Yeah. Like, she could have just like taken a lightsaber and been like, this is over now. Or, you know, pull the house down. Or whatever. Like, do something a little more proactive than just, you know.
Yeah.
However, and are you feeling good? Because I feel like we could wrap up at this point.
I think.
Anything you'd like to add?
I'm just going to – I'll add one thing.
Yeah.
I think – it is my opinion that if there wasn't the nostalgia of Star Wars for you, that you and I would have trashed pretty hard on this movie. So I'm going to preface that, because there's going to be people that listen that are like, no, you guys aren't digging into it the way that you
do. That's fair.
And there's a lot of issues with this movie.
Sure.
But I still had a good time. Yep. Go ahead and end on your high note.
Here's my high note. And here's why this is the best case I can make for this movie in terms of like what it gets right. So at the end. At the very end, after all the hugging, Rey winds up on Tatooine.
Yeah.
and she's got two lightsabers, and she very reverently and ceremoniously buries them. And then we see the Force ghosts of Luke and Leia. For the record, I'm down with all this. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, and here's the thing. No matter what came before in the whole movie, the fact that she had some time to train with Luke, and then she apparently had much more time to train with Leia, which I actually really loved as well.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, really great. I also really liked that J.J. Abrams, like, you were complaining so much about The Last Jedi because, like, learn the Force. It's like, well, we already knew that Leia was going to know. Yeah. Like, she already had Force stuff. So, like, okay, great. Let's throw the scene in where she's training with Luke. That makes sense. I'm fine with that. And, like, whatever. So we've successfully, nakedly established that Leia is a Jedi. Great. So Leia, she probably chose not to be a Jedi Knight because she was a politician and she was really good at that. Whatever. But she knows her stuff well enough to be able to train Rey as well. Also, really quick aside, hats off to them for using Leia well in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, you very successfully incorporated a dead woman into this movie, yeah. And I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Luke and Leia showing up as Force ghosts at the end, if you had literally ignored every part of the plot that comes before, and you just saw the ending of this movie, and Rey is showing up with the two lightsabers of Luke and Leia, and she's ceremoniously burying them in the desert at Luke's last home before he went off to become a Jedi Knight, with the last family that he had lived with, because this is a movie about family, and then turning on her own lightsaber, which you've never seen before,
yeah.
Which is pretty great.
It was a cool lightsaber, too.
It's an orange saber, yeah. Which is also pretty great.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that, very much so, which we could talk more about. We did a lightsaber quiz. And
we did.
And it turns out that the orange saber is a combination of, like, red and gray or whatever.
Yeah,
so it's like, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Also, I want her saber now.
Like, with the little twist thing?
Yeah. Oh, that's
cool.
The coolest.
Cool.
So, anyway, so she... so she has her own saber now. She turns it off. So she switches it on and off, and then she gets up. And anyway, and somebody comes and asks her who she is, and she says Rey, and then she decides that her name is going to be Rey Skywalker. Which, again, I think even if you're like hating on the movie, and even if you're like all kinds of, you know, there's whatever, like, I think is great. I think it's great. Because even if we said that Rey is still an orphan, like I said, erase the whole movie, Rey is still an orphan, doesn't have a last name. What's your last name? Well, both of my Jedi Masters were Skywalkers,
yeah.
So I'm a Skywalker. And earns the title of the movie, as well as Ben Solo's self-sacrifice at the end. And the last shot of her and BB-8 against the skyline... being the iconic,
yeah, totally.
The iconic, yeah. Like cap, end cap of the whole entire franchise, is totally beautiful, totally beautiful.
Yeah.
And I really don't think that there was a better shot to end on. I don't think there was a better way to end the entire franchise than that exact, that whole scene. I think was the perfect ending, no matter what the movie was before. And so. I, in summary, am still a fan, still love this trilogy, and even though there's lots and lots of problems that I could pick apart to death, there's a real emotional connection, which is, I think, very much fueled by nostalgia, but also I think that there's legitimate strength and beauty in this movie, as well as, obviously, the whole trilogy. So I will be an apologist, not to say that the movie is perfect, not to say that everyone should not find fault with it, because there are plenty of faults, but to, at the end of the day, continue being a fan and continue to love the franchise, and not be like sort of disaffected hater, because I don't think there's any justification for it.
That's Star Wars week, everybody.
All right.
I think that's a great way to end. I think that this is a property that means a lot to a lot of people, and it's a whole lot of fun. With this movie and all the others.
Absolutely.
So thank you, everybody, for joining in on our Star Wars week. 3 episodes in 1 week. We hope that you enjoyed them. We enjoyed it. We enjoyed doing them. So, I needed to let you know that we have some novels of comments on the Last Jedi episode that we need to get in there and respond to.
It's going to be all right.
So the conversation,
we have our work cut out.
Yeah, the conversation will continue on Facebook. So,
sounds good.
And thank you, Michael Bond-Miller, for the wonderful music.
Yes, thank you for the wonderful music. In this case, I think we may actually go ahead and use some Star Wars music for the outro.
That's fair.
So for all the other episodes, thank you, Michael Bond-Miller. For this episode,
thank you, John Williams. For the wonderful outro music.
And please, everyone, as always and forever, may the Force be with you.
And cut.